crops. And Lord, you are the one who designed all these amazing things. And we just ask that you'll give us skill and understanding to grow in what we're familiar with and even what we're not, and how to be cooperating with you in the garden. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Jeremiah 17:7-8. But I will bless the person who puts his trust in me. He is like a tree growing near a stream and sending out roots to the water. It is not afraid when hot weather comes, because its leaves stay green. It has no worries when there is no rain. It keeps on bearing fruit. What kinds of staple foods do you use, and what do you think of when you think of staple crops? Anybody? Okay. The things that we use most often, right? So, I mean, wheat, corn, legumes, your grains, your beans, your legumes, and even some of the other foods that we are learning to use more, greens and that sort of thing too. But National Geographic said, a staple food is a food that is eaten regularly and supplies a major proportion of a person's energy and nutritional needs. Cereal grains and tubers, legumes such as beans, lentils, and chickpeas are staple foods. And in countries where you don't get the right combination of a grain and a legume, you end up with malnutrition. So you need those combinations. So it's good to think through, you know, if you're going to work towards preparedness, how would you learn to grow some of these staple crops? So in this session, we're going to cover basic staple crops, tips for growing and storing these crops, along with resources where you can find key growing information when you need it most. Where can I get information? When you're seeking information, compare sources. You know, sometimes if you're searching online, there's this or there's that. But try to make some comparisons, because once in a while, someone's just tried something in their experience, but maybe they haven't had an established practice in what they're sharing. So I'll try and share some things. Johnny's Seeds, the title is Johnny's Select Seeds, but online it's johnnyseeds.com. They have a wonderful growers library where you can access, there's videos, there's key growing information for specific crops, like when you started, germination and planting and harvest and all of that. It's usually a nice, is this one not on? Okay, I was hoping not to have to hold it, but okay, thank you. So Johnny Seed has a good library online for growers, and it's for market gardeners, but also home growers. You can find a lot of useful information there. And so you'll find time-tested information there, because they kind of work as a research and development in gardening. Also, Melissa Norris at melissanorris.com shares many practical gardening resources. And I think Angela mentioned this earlier. She's the one that has the charts. So like your spacing charts and different things there that are very helpful. So when do I start planting? Now, we've kind of been coming over that question for a little while. And I think one of the easiest things is to calculate backwards. So earlier this morning, we talked a little bit about your zone. Find your zone in your area. What is your first and your last frost date? So from the first frost date, your last frost date in the spring, you will count backwards. And, you know, sometimes that varies, but generally you want to think about planting your seeds in your little pots or in your soil blocks about 4 to 8 weeks before frost. And that will just depend on the seed. Some things like tomatoes take a little longer, 4 to 6 weeks. Like we said, squash and that sort of thing, you don't I planted them like 4 to 5 weeks. They get leggy. I think 3 is probably max, maybe a little bit. Just want to give them a jump start so when you put them in, they can put their feet down and make roots all they want. So determine when the number of weeks your seed needs to be indoors before planting them in the garden, and plant your seed indoors based on the number of weeks for that crop, and then just work towards that frost date. How deep do you plant the seeds? That actually varies. Now, some seeds are really small, and like she was saying, you know, if you, with the little discs, you can put saliva in there and a toothpick and, you know, plant them. But generally, the rule of thumb is 2 times their width or diameter. Now, some seeds that are a little bigger, like beans, they pretty much have to be about a full inch in the soil. So it's good to kind of get an idea even on your hand. You know, what's an inch? Where's an inch spacing? Because then you can just use your finger to plant the larger beans. But the little ones, you do want to be cautious because they get too deep. Some of them need a little bit of light close to the surface to germinate. So those are factors. For tiny seeds, you can place them on the surface of the soil and then barely cover them with soil or vermiculite. And you can get, now vermiculite is the white little pieces that were in the potting soil. You can get fine vermiculite. So you just over the top. And that keeps the moisture there with the seeds. And then don't compress the soil. You can pat it, but you don't want to compact it. So just gently. All right, then I want to go through different crops kind of based on what you can put in earlier in the season and then mid-season and late. So in the early season, we can put in the greens and the brassicas, so your cabbage and your kales and those kinds of things. They can be started 3 to 6 weeks before transplanting. Most greens and brassicas prefer cooler growing temperatures, so they just have a little easier time. And then you can apply row covers at the time of planting to exclude pests from the crop. Control cabbage worms with loopers with, okay, if I can say this, the BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. I'm not sure how you say that whole thing, but that will help to control those. Then things like root crops such as carrots and beets may be planted in the early spring. I haven't grown down here in Texas, so I don't know what your early dates are, but some of you are probably close to being able to put those things in, or soon. Carrots, you can sow carrots from early spring to midsummer. Mist the soil surface to keep them moist, and do not allow the soil to crust before the emergence of seedlings, which takes 1 to 3 weeks, depending on temperature and moisture. Thin is needed and keep weed-free. I think I forgot I may have slides. Okay, I'll just set that one up there. To prevent the tops from greening, you ever gotten green carrots, you know that green part is a little bitter. You can mulch over that if they start to, their shoulders start to come out of the ground. Mulch them a little bit. And then in session 5, I mentioned that if you mix your carrot seed with potting soil, that you don't have to thin them, or you don't have to thin them as much. And I believe I told you a packet of seeds to 1 gallon of mix. That's probably, most seed packets are, what, 1,200 seeds? You probably don't want that many carrots all at once. But you could succession plant them. And you could do a portion of those seeds in with a portion of that potting soil. Mix it up really good. I've also used sand for this. And then you just put it in your trough, 1-inch trough, and you just sprinkle it as you go slowly, but you don't want to go, oh, I need to go back. Well, if you do that, you're going to end up with more seeds coming up. It just simplifies the thinning process a little bit. And then in session 11, we're going to talk about extending the season and actually couple weeks ago, Bethany just dug some of our carrots, and we had snow, we had freezing temperatures, it got down to like -6, which I know isn't super cold, but I would have thought they would have gone bad, but they were crisp and they were sweet. They were so good. So we'll cover a little bit more of those in session 11. I know this is a lot of information. I just kind of tried to highlight so you can get a picture of what kinds of crops you can do when. But if you want more detailed information, again, as you can, so don't feel like you have to take all the notes. Beets, you can sow in a cold frame or indoors in early spring, about 5 to 6 weeks before planting, before transplanting out, but only after heavy frosts become infrequent. So you may not have to wait to your late frost, but your heavy frost, you can plant them in. Direct seed them, early sowings when the soil has warmed to 45 degrees, and thin your plants to about 3 inches apart, or you can just plant them 3 inches apart if you know, they get big, so they need that space around each other. And for a continuous supply of greens and smaller tender beets, sow at 2-week intervals until 8 weeks before your regular heavy frosts are expected. So that would be like succession planting up until the fall. Perennial herbs such as oregano, thyme, sage, chives, lavender are best established in their own bed. So when you think about herbs, think about, is this something that is going to come back next year? And some of those are perennials, and it's nice to have one area. Annual herbs or semi-annual are like basil, cilantro, dill, parsley, and they usually, I think parsley can come back the next year, but it's usually going to try to go to seed. Those kinds of things you want to plant each year and set them out after transplanting frost. Now, let me see if I have another. Okay. This is like early spring, and here I have some, we have lettuce and flowers like under the shade cloth. The cold frame has the peppers. And then that would be our tomatoes and the bean lattice that went in, the trellis for the beans, and then I have squash, and we had a lot of sunflowers over there. I'm just trying to remember. Okay, I am behind. Broccoli. Okay, this is beets. It's a little maybe hard to see, but these ones, I think, actually wintered over, and you can see they're not really big leaves, but they're coming back up. And those wintered over, and we were able to dig them and eat them again. That was a summer. That would be a summer picking. And you know, it takes a while to clean beets, so you want to clean them off. This is actually a chard. It's rainbow chard. Isn't that pretty with that yellow in it? Okay, I'll come to those. Legume crops. Legume crops provide essential proteins, vitamins, and minerals. There is an abundant variety of beans and peas to choose from, and many are easy to grow. Vining legume crops such as peas and climbing beans need a solid string or trellis support system. So here you can see the white section in the middle. That's, Angela had a picture yesterday with the peas growing on the trellis. And that's very helpful. Actually, that's the first time I've used a netted trellis. I have used pole beans before, but they're just, each kind of bean is a little different. Peas love the cool weather, so you can direct seed them in the spring as soon as the soil can be worked. And you don't thin them, just space them accordingly. You want to support the varieties that are taller than 3 feet with some kind of a crop support as a trellis, or like chicken netting or some kind of fencing, you can put that in. The ones that are shorter, they will kind of support each other as they grow because they vine on each other. It's a good idea to, let's see here. If you're planting, the earlier you plant, well, the spring planting is better because you'll get more of a crop. If you plant it later, the heat, they don't like it so well. And so midsummer plantings are not quite as prolific as the earlier harvests. And you can also inoculate peas with, okay, where's Angela? The term just slipped me. Angie, the term for inoculating beans and I can't remember that. I didn't put it in my notes. But it helps bind, helps the nitrogen fixate in the soil. We talked about it earlier when we were talking about planting beans. So, and then if you're planting fall crops of peas, look for powdery mildew-resistant varieties because as it gets cooler, they can be more subject to that. And you'll want early maturing varieties that will still flower as the daylight diminishes. So sow them about 2 months before frost and keep the seeds well watered to encourage good germination. Now, early summer is a good time to plant beans. I'm going to come back through here again. Oh, okay. This is an example. In the forefront here on this trellis is peas and behind is cucumbers. And this is what they call a cattle panel. There's also hog panels. It's a very heavy galvanized fencing. And they usually run anywhere from 3 feet to 4 feet by about 16 feet. And these can be very effective for trellising. Some people will take them and make an arch. And then you can plant on either side and some vines can grow over flowers and that sort of thing. They're very reusable. They don't rust. So that can be a very good way to trellis. You can see the deer in the background on our, there's a fence between here and the deer, but they come and eat where we toss our cuttings. So there's different kinds of beans, and I want to talk about more like how they grow. You have bush beans. You have some beans that go like 3 or 4 feet. And then you have others that are pole beans and they'll go 6 or 7 feet. So this is actually a picture of the girls when they were younger. I don't know why it didn't get all the way up there. Stringing the bean pole. We did this for a number of years where we'd run the string up and down, and then the pole beans actually climb up like that. And then you can pick them. It just depends on what you find works best for you. Sometimes bush beans are very productive, and there's some very good ones. Blue Lake bush beans. I'm trying to think if there's another one. I just tried last year. I didn't make a note of it, but jade. Jade was phenomenal. That was very tender, very long, straight, really nice ones. You can succession plant beans every 2 to 3 weeks through the midsummer. The tender pods are good for eating. You know, you buy them in the store. They're nice and tender. You can use those for cooking, canning, or freezing. But if you're going to use beans for dry storage, then you want something that's going to mature and it will need to grow the whole season. You won't pick it. You just let it grow and mature. And you can do that with pintos or black beans or something that you would like to, you know, dry and store down for harvest. Some of those beans are climbers. And 1 year we found that out thinking we were planting a bush variety of a dry bean, and here they climbed. So, and some go higher. This was a... We planned this teepee for the kids, and in the garden, I think it's really nice to be able to find ways to incorporate the children's interests. So we made this teepee with our extra poles and ran the string up. It was a little more cumbersome, so eventually we just spent, and the poles eventually were not working anymore, but we planted beans on there. This would be an example of bush beans, and 1 year... I planted them close together and they grew up and they filled the aisles. So the next year I spaced them a little farther apart and they grew up and they filled the aisles. So and it just kind of went like that. Okay, here's the trellis. In the forefront again is the cucumbers, but in the middle you can see those beans grew all the way up that trellis. And This was this last summer, so we were able to get quite a few dry beans off. This is another example. There are, they call it the three sisters. If you plant beans, corn, and squash together, they cooperate with each other. The beans, especially if you use the inoculant, will fix the nitrogen in the soil, which really aids the corn. And if you plant squash around there, especially if you have a open field, the squash will shade the ground from the weeds and it will help keep the moisture in. So this is an example. I tried this for the first time this year with corn and sorghum. I put bean plants on, right, planted one bean plant next to each corn. And right here you can see how the bean is winding itself around the stalk. So that's another way to grow them. There's the teepee full with them peeking out. It was open on, they had access on the other side, so they could go in there and play and pretend they were Indians. And those were some that I grew this summer, which actually I have to go home and shell them because they're still waiting. Okay. I didn't see this. I don't know how we were scrambling. So this slide show has some challenges, but, this is how I've typically done the tomatoes. I'll put three or sometimes four tomatoes around the post and tie them up and then keep tying them as they go. And it, in our area, it lets the sunlight come right to the fruit, ripen it. And, it's also easier to pick. You can see, oh, that one's ready or that one's, it needs to wait. Do I cut the suckers? Yes. I think somehow I got this. I need to actually be talking about squash first. So I don't know how I got to tomatoes, but, squash, let's talk about that. Winter squash is actually quite easy to grow and it's a good staple. It has carbohydrates, a lot of minerals and vitamins, and especially vitamin A, which we go into the winter with. It's really good. You can sow that directly in the ground after danger of frost is passed. And like I said, you can sow it indoors, but not too far in advance. It's in regions where it's cool, it works really well to put black plastic down where you're going to seed the squash, and they can be 12 inches apart. So one year I just did one row of squash on the edge of my garden, and I think I had about 90 feet, and then it had lots of free room to fill out, and because it needs room, it'll go 15, 20 feet, sometimes more, and it will produce the fruit along that. So, but it really liked the plastic, and I had planted some indoors and found that it was almost the same. In fact, sometimes if the conditions are right, you plant it and it's going to come up faster and grow faster than the ones that you transplant out. So you just kind of have to learn on that one. Summer squash, zucchini, yellow, crookneck squash, straight neck, they're easy to grow. I usually plant them in the ground. Have anybody heard of the hullless pumpkins? Anybody? One person? Two? Oh. So how many of you like pumpkin seeds to eat? Hullless pumpkins grow seeds without any hulls. They taste so good. They are a little tricky to start because they don't have the hull. You don't want to overwater them when you start them. And I do start those indoors. So just pay attention to that. A really nice way to eat them when they're, well, let me back up. When you harvest them, they're hard. You can use a saw to cut through them. And I did have a picture of that. Yeah, okay, I've got myself backwards here. If you have like a hacksaw or something, you can cut them open and scoop out the seeds. You'll want to rinse them, let them dry. Once they're dry, And you don't have to put them in a dryer or anything, especially if you want to save the seed. But I run a little bit of, I'll moisten them again and put some salt on them. Scoop, let the salt dissolve, and then you can put them in your dehydrator or in your oven. And wow, those are so tasty. They just, they're great. You put them on your salad or eat them for breakfast. Cucumbers love warm weather, and they are very sensitive to cold. So do sow the seeds indoors 3 to 4 weeks before transplanting, and set them out when the soil and the air are warm. They just don't like the cold very well. You can grow them on a trellis, like we showed, the trellis to make you jealous, or these netting, like we had. I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to go back farther. Melons, you want to sow those seed indoors as well. 1 month before transplanting, no sooner, or until, and keep them at 80 to 90 degrees until germination. Handle the young plants carefully and never let the soil dry out. Now, you don't want them soggy, but they do like moisture. And then as they're getting ready to go in the garden to harden off, you want to reduce some of the moisture for a little bit. You still don't want them to dry out, but they do need to have a little bit. They also do need to be hardened off, so they're also very sensitive to cold. And you can mulch, again, with plastic. If you're in a cool area, you can mulch and plant them in your plastic, and you can use row covers to help them get themselves established, so some kind of plastic cover. And we want to talk a little bit about, you can prune your squash and your cucumbers and your melons. It's a little trickier to do if they're just on the ground, because once they start sending out all those tendrils, you might not notice which is the main one, and you definitely don't want to cut it. But you can prune them so that you get more fruit off of a few vines instead of smaller fruit off of many vines. You can grow some of the smaller squash on a trellis. I don't know that I would grow. This is a winter squash. It's sweet meat, and they're heavy. They're, you know, one this size is probably 10 to 15 pounds, and they can get bigger. But some of your smaller squash, trying to think of like a butternut or maybe the delicata, some of those could probably be grown on a trellis. And then you can see where the main vine is, and if you want to take the side shoots off, you can do that. Eggplant and peppers are also heat-loving plants. Start them indoors 6 to 8 weeks before transplanting. Support them with bamboo stakes. And 1 year I grew these little cute little, I think they were called Kermit eggplants. They were about this big, little round ones, and I wasn't familiar with them, but I waited and waited and waited, and they got a little bit golden. And I got those in, and I put them in the oven, and they were so bitter. So pick them before they change to that light color, because when they're starting to do that, they're starting to prepare seed. The bigger ones are easier. You can tell they're purple. They're ready to go. So I have a hard time growing eggplant. I mean, our summers have to be just right, so I haven't done too much. What do you do? Oh, for the squash. I'm sorry, I went back to eggplant. Yes, we're going to get to that at the end, but you do want to turn your water off on your squash, on your tomatoes, on your melons, but especially the squash at the end. If the water is off, it will mature inside. The flavor will mature. The sweetness will mature. And it just helps it to cure. And I'll get to the curing of that in just a little bit. I'm not out of time. How am I doing? Okay. So then tomatoes, you can sow them 5 to 6 weeks before transplanting. You do want to maintain a good temperature. We talked a little bit about the issues with the lights. needing to have enough sunlight or your grow lights down so they don't get leggy. There are two kinds, basic kinds of tomatoes. You have bush tomatoes. Those are called determinate tomatoes. They don't need to be pruned, and they are best supported with cages or the basket weave system where you support them between posts. The determinants produce a set amount of fruit, so they will not be reaching endlessly for the sky. And if you try to prune their suckers, you will reduce your fruit production. But there are indeterminate tomatoes, and those are vining tomatoes. They can grow tall, and they grow up 6 or 7 feet, and sometimes longer. They typically are supported on stakes, like I showed you, sturdy cages or a trellis. And I plant 3 to 4 around. That gives each plant about a square foot of root space to expand itself. And then as they grow, every 10 to 12 inches, I tie them and I take off the suckers. Where's my, I feel like I am lost. So where I was at. I have a picture of the tomatoes with the sucker. So yeah, it's advantageous on indeterminate tomatoes to take the suckers off, because suckers will just grow and they will take the nutrition from the vine and from the fruit. So if you take those out, your plant will put more efforts into the fruit that's growing and into growing more more flowers and all. So, I'm sorry, I don't know how this got mixed up, but yeah, you can see here. So, I don't know where my slide went with the suckers, but you have your main stalk. You have the leaf, and you'll also have a little branch that will have the flowers. Now, the sucker will grow right between the main stalk and the leaf, right in this little joint. And you can see it when sometimes they're very little, and you know the main leaf is there and the main stem. You can pinch it out when it's little. When they start to get about the same size as the stem, you can use a pruners and cut them out. You want to go through and do that about every week to week and a half to just stay on top of it, because, and as much as we try, it seems like every summer we have some that just get away from us. So, and then the other thing with indeterminate tomatoes is that the fruit, it keeps setting fruit blossoms as it grows, and so the fruit will ripen over the season. The indeterminate ones, they set fruit, they're going to ripen, and then they're going to be, the determinate ones will set fruit, ripen, and they'll be done sooner. So the indeterminate go longer. All right. I don't think I have it on this slide this year, but this last summer, I planted alyssum at the base of every post. I ended up having an excess of them, and I just thought I'll put them in. And they're good for helping keep the aphids and different things off of your plants. So alyssum and marigolds are good companion flowers to plant with your tomatoes and even around your brassicas and things. One thing I did notice at the end of the summer was that there were more ladybugs in the garden than I had typically seen. And in our area, there's wheat growing, and in the summer, I've often seen a lot of ladybugs. We'll take a walk while the wheat is green. There'll be a lot of ladybugs, but we haven't always had so many in our garden. So, also, when you harvest your tomatoes, any fruit, when you're getting close to the end of the season, but any fruit that is breaking color, so it's starting to show, it'll get sometimes a little yellow or a little orange before it turns red, it will still ripen after harvest. So pick your tomatoes before frost or the cold periods. And especially if you're going to get rain, you know there's rain coming, try to get those in because you want to pick them dry. And, you know, even if they're not ripe, and I did have, like, one year, this is the year we planted, like, 140 tomatoes, and I had piles of these tomatoes. I ended up giving boxes away. If they're dry, you can take them in a box, and if you have an area where they're between above 50, but 60 to 70 degrees, they will ripen, and you can still use them. So don't feel like it's a loss if all your tomatoes don't ripen. In fact, this year I had tomatoes in December that we picked in October, and I finally made sauce out of them December 5. So there they are. We had already done applesauce, and I still had the last of the tomatoes to do. So I layered them single layer in those boxes and just stacked them. We had to go for Thanksgiving, and we left them in the warmest part of the house. I came back and made sauce. Corn. You want to have enough room for the corn, like Angie was saying, plant it in blocks. And you do want to plant it. You can start it in the house and set it out, but it could be a big job if you have a whole big plot. Otherwise, it likes to go in when it's warm. And I have also had good success adding that fish fertilizer when they get about this size or a little bit more, especially if they start to yellow. You add that a few times, and sometimes you don't have to add anything else the rest, other than your basic soil analysis amendments that you did. We had a lot of corn that year. Girls were busy helping haul it in. Here's the melons, and these have ripened up. It's probably late September, and they'll just all of a sudden come on, and then we eat melons for a few months. Aren't those? That's good. Now, you can do something else with your melons. Did you know you can dehydrate them? And they make a very good electrolyte boost because they're a little bit salty, but they have a lot of minerals. So when you dry them, they're not quite as sweet because the sugar evaporates, but they make a tasty treat. My youngest daughter is actually doing midwifery, and she says, "Mom, those are really good after we've been up all night at a labor." So, all right, potatoes. When you buy your seed potato, buy it from a supplier at least 4 to 6 weeks before you intend to plant them. Typically, grocery store potatoes, you just go and pick out your potatoes, are sprayed with inhibitors, growth inhibitors, so they don't want those potatoes to sprout because they want to be able to sell them through the season. So seed potatoes are not sprayed like that. And they're also typically certified for certain disease resistance, and they are certified seed potatoes. So try to get those. Sometimes you can get them at your hardware store, local farm supply, but you can also order them. And in the list, in the handout, there is a list. There's potato sources there as well. We've used the main Potato Lady. There's another one, Grand Teton Potatoes, here in the Midwest as well. How many pounds of seed potatoes do I need to order? Figure 1 pound of seed potatoes will plant an 8 to 10 foot row if the plants are 12 inches apart. And then follow the supplier's instructions. But one thing you do want to do, now these are some that I had left over from the last year, and they have been trying to get the light. They, you know, we didn't use everything, and sometimes I'll replant them, but when they sprout like this, it doesn't work very well to grow them. They're too far along, so you don't want to plant, if your seed potatoes get leggy like that, you don't want to plant them. Okay, I thought I had another slide. You see the little bitty sprouts on this potato. What you'll want to do is let them sit out, you want to pre-sprout your potatoes about 4 to 6 weeks before you plant them. You want to do this bring the potatoes out into a dark area for about 2 weeks, and then spread the tubers out in flats or single layers and store them in a warm, medium, lighted place for about another 2 weeks. Some of them will be bigger and some smaller. Like these potatoes, you could probably cut them into at least 2 pieces, and they'll give you a guide on your seed potato instructions. But you can cut them, lay them out. The air will actually seal the cut, and then they will slowly start the process of putting out those sprouts. You don't really want your sprouts super long, you know, a little bit. They can have a little bit of sprout on them when you plant them. But prepare your soil, and according to your soil analysis, we talked about that in soil, and follow the planting guides. Potatoes do well at about a pH of 6. They require calcium for adequate plant health and tuber-specific gravity. But you'll want to plant them. They are one of the earlier crops that you can get in. And you do want to plant them when the soil has reached 50 to 70 degrees. So they can't go in as early as peas. Here's a nice little tidbit, something to watch for, and that is when you see the dandelions blooming, you can plant your potatoes. And this comes back to observing nature, where you become aware of what the other plants are doing. So the dandelions, when you see, you know, a fair number, probably not the first one, but a fair number of them, okay, they know that spring is coming. You can plant either whole seed, whole potatoes, if they're the size of like a hen's egg, or you can cut larger ones, and then plant them about 10 to 12 inches apart in furrows 4 to 6 inches deep. And then you'll want to hill them as they grow. If the plants are about 4 to 6 inches, you can, you know, dig up the soil. So you can either plant them in a trench and leave the soil on the side, or bring in soil. You can also mulch them with straw, which, you know, you do want to be sure of your source. But if you put the straw on there, it will help keep the moisture around the plants, and the plants will also, there's two kinds of potatoes as well. There's determinate and indeterminate. The indeterminate ones, if you layer those, every time it goes up about every 6 inches, you put another layer of straw, it will send out another layer of potatoes. Determinate potatoes, you're going to get one cluster in each, under each plant. Have any of you tried planting in potato towers or potato bags? Anybody tried that? I tried a potato tower 1 year, and I don't know, this may be why I was so disappointed. I mean, I did it what I thought was well. I had water and everything and put the straw around it, and maybe one or two little potatoes. I was like, why is that, when the other potatoes were doing fine? I think it may be this factor that, and it's not always, you're not always told, okay, this is a determinate or that's an indeterminate. I'll give you a resource, but the indeterminate ones will layer as they go up for probably a foot or so. In The Laid Back Gardener by the late Larry Hodgson, he talks about the determinate and indeterminate tomatoes, and that is also in the handout. You can find the link. He gives us a good description of it and also gives a really nice list. And he's been gardening for a long time. So I'm going to, when I order my seed potatoes this year, I'm going to watch his list and say, okay, I'm going to try this or that one. Let's see here. Okay, that's an example. We planted, when we tilled, we left the furrow on this side, planted the potatoes, and as they grew up, I pulled the soil, lifted the hoses and pulled the soil back over. And then here, where the girls are, you can see the potatoes. That's August, so they're getting nice and green. Here's an example of the flowers. Once the flowers set, or you begin to see that, you can go and you can get a few potatoes from underneath if you want something to boil. Fresh potatoes do not bake. You want to boil them. You'll be frustrated trying to bake them. But you can glean a few here or there. You probably don't want to take it all. Let the other ones mature. And then in the fall, you want them, they'll start to die back like this, where they just, the yellow and all that. And they're getting close. But you do need to let them turn off the water and let them finish hardening up. The skins are very tender if they haven't had a little time without water to actually the skin to firm up a little bit. You still have to be kind of careful with them. This year, these potatoes really turned out really nice. And we had fun digging in the sun. When you harvest your potatoes, of course, they need to have the water shut off a little bit, and the skins will start to firm up. Some years, it's drier, and I mean, these ones, that's really ideal, where there's not mud on them, there's just a little bit of dirt. If they're like that, there's no reason to wash them unless you're going to eat them. You'll want to put them into storage. The dirt, a lot of times, will just fall off. Some years, if it's wet, it can be more challenging, and then you get clods. And there's another talk on Audioverse by Bob Gregory, where he goes into storage for crops, and he covers more details. But he recommended that you would wash off the heavy, like clay, if it's really clumpy on there. You would wash your potatoes carefully, but then you need to put them in something and air dry them before you can put them away. This year, I took and put them all in their sacks, and then I laid shade cloth and some more gunny sacks on top and let them dry. And the dirt will start to fall off if you turn them about maybe a few days, 5 to 7 days, turn them so they can finish drying out. Okay, let me do a squash. Squash is so fun to grow. And, oh, I don't know if the kids are in here. This kitten was trying to find the other one. This is banana squash. This is actually the first squash variety we ever tried growing. They're huge. And you can get them, you know, 3 feet. Yeah. They're very good. They're sweet. They store really well, too. There's the other kitten. Where's the kids? You see the kitty? He's hiding from the other one. And then sometimes it can help to have a big picking bag for your corn and things. If you go out one morning and you see this in your squash plants, you've had a frost. And if you haven't already harvested them, some old timers say this is the way you should do it. Let the squash have a little bit of a frost and then you harvest them. Others are saying if you cut off the water and pick them, let them have the last few weeks of time to actually sweeten up, that it's good for them too. Yes, my husband brought the wheelbarrow right in the laundry room. So that was very handy to wash the squash. You can use a little bleach or vinegar in your water if you get the dirt off of them. That actually helps to keep the microbes from settling in and trying to invade the skin. And then dry them out, for a good place. Okay, here's my saw picture. I was trying to determine if I wanted seed from those. Those are yellow crookneck, but behind is the hullus pumpkins. And those were hard to cut into. A kitchen knife, you might slip and hurt yourself, but I found the saw very practical. Oh, that's a cucumber with kale. I'm sorry that slide is small. Onions and garlic. I don't have a picture of garlic. Okay, I'll come back to onions. There are two kinds of garlic. My friend here, I don't know if she left, but she grows garlic, and so she's good at it. There's soft neck garlic that has soft necks at maturity. It can be braided. The bulbs produce medium-sized cloves on the outer layer, plus 2 to 4 smaller ones inside, and they are somewhat less winter-hardy than stiff neck. Stiff neck plants send up hard stalks called scapes that should be topped. Scapes are edible and can be used for pesto or in dishes calling for garlic. Southern growers do not experience winter temperatures consistently below 40 to 50 degrees and may need to apply a cold treatment to stiff-neck garlic. So place the garlic in a paper bag and refrigerate for 10 to 12 weeks prior to planting. And again, you can find more information there at Johnny's Seeds. So garlic can be real fun to grow, but the scapes, you can pick them and saute them, chop them and freeze them. They're very tasty. Harvest your garlic between June and August, depending on your location. And do not leave it in the ground too long or the bulbs will separate and rot. You can dig it with a fork or an undercutter. Be careful not to bruise it. Brush off the soil, and then it does need to cure in a warm, shady space with good air circulation. Allow it to cure until the neck is dry and the outer skin is papery, so approximately 2 to 3 weeks. So you do need some area because it can take a lot of space if you're growing a lot of garlic. You harvest it between June to August generally, all that may vary a little bit in the south. And then, you know, store them in mesh bags and keep it in a dry, cool place. Now, garlic doesn't usually keep all winter, so we have found it very helpful. You can blanch your garlic cloves. You know how you blanch peaches to can them. Put your garlic cloves in, take them all, you know, move them all apart. Don't peel them. Put them in hot boiling water and then put them in, yes, Bethany is telling, 2 minutes in the hot water and then put them in the cold water. And those skins come off amazingly. Then you could mince your garlic and dry it. You can slice it. And that's one of my favorite ways to use it right now is just slice it. And I use it right in my cooking. Slice it and dry it. Put it in the dehydrator. And then you have it almost like fresh. Okay. I'll come back here to, we talked just a little bit about pre-curing, but there's really important. Some crops will rot if they don't have a little bit of a curing time. Squash, potatoes, beans, and corn all need a little time to cure if you're storing them. So withhold water before harvest for squash, pumpkins, potatoes, cantaloupe, the flavor will improve, dry beans, and corn. And then store your crops clean and dry. So if you have them damp at all, you're going to risk them going bad before you can use them. So store everything clean and dry. I did talk about withholding the water from the squash. Onions also need some time to cure. So when they get bulbed like this, the water should be turned off, and then you can pull them, you could use some, but you want those necks to be drying down. They shouldn't be green. They'll actually go back to like the paper skin color and they'll be falling over. And they need to be falling over, at least 50% of them falling over. Then you can pull them and lay them there for some time to dry, a few days. Then you'll want to move them into a dry, shaded area to continue curing until those papers, the necks fully dry down and the paper around them, their skins dry to a papery texture. So I think I'm out of time, but check out Bob Gregory's Storing Food for the Long Haul on Audioverse, and he goes through some of these curing tips. So the final thought is, whatever our circumstances, In trusting the Lord, we are assured that he will keep his promise. Bread shall be given him, his water shall be sure. Isaiah 33:16. Thank you. Do we have any? Maybe I can take one question. Yes. We do take the poles in and out, and we use those. We use a post hole pounder. Those posts are small enough that it can fit inside of the post hole pounder. I'm actually thinking to switch to the trellis to make you jealous because it's simpler to set up. And you can run one string for a plant. And so that plant comes up and you just wind it around and you can see those suckers. And I think starting out, I would recommend going with that. He'll explain it on the video if you check that video out too. So, A Trellis to Make You Jealous by Josh Satin. Yeah. Yeah. By Josh Satin. Yeah, he has a market garden. Anyone? Yes. How do you store carrots? That's something I am still learning. Carrots need more cold. Some layer them in sand. If you have a cellar or an option for a cellar, I think that's probably the best, or extra refrigerator. I actually am trying some right now that we picked a few weeks ago in sawdust, layered on their side in sawdust in the drawers in my refrigerator. So they'll probably keep a few weeks. Yes. Okay. How to think backwards on when you plant. Do you have any tips on that?
Find your last frost date and then take whatever crop you're planting. So tomatoes, 8 to 10 weeks before. Is it 6 to 8 or 8 to 6? 6 to 8 weeks before you put them outside. So, and then if you're doing soil blocking, you take a third off of that. So what's your frost date? My frost date is May 15. So I'm going to go back 2 weeks is May, 6 weeks is just the end of March. Every seed packet will have it on the back, or you can Google it real quick. Yeah, every seed packet. If you're soil blocking, you can take a third of that time off. So if I'm soil blocking my tomatoes 2 weeks to April, then I'm probably going to plant mid-April. And I did that last year. And I still what happened is my greenhouse was terrible. My hoop house has to be opened and closed and opened and closed. When I had a real greenhouse, the thermostat opened and closed the windows for me. And when I had the hoop house, I have to lift the plastic. And I was gone, and the people I left it in charge with didn't open the plastic when it got hot, and my plants cooked. Like, dead. Most all of them. So, it was the middle of April. I went and replanted my tomato seeds, and they were just fine. You don't have... It worked just fine. The Lord is good. And so, yeah. Thank you all for coming.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.